Venture into the shadows with hosts Jordan and Ashley as they peel back the veil to reveal in-depth images into a different realm. One of strange events, places, occurrences, phenomena, and sometimes even horror. Join them as they journey through the spooky door.
On this episode, we have a very special guest, Jordan McLaughlin, who is an award-winning game creator, president, and owner of Ricky Mage Games. Jordan goes into details about his award-winning game, Don't Get Stabbed, a horror-themed card game that allows you to be the killer or the victim. Jordan talks about the plethora of games he designed and published. He explains the process of building and designing his card games and how horror films in particular influence the creation of Don't Get Stabbed. Jordan shares with us why he started making games in the first place, and we talk about our mutual love of horror films and board games. So roll for initiative and journey with us through the spooky door.
Okay, so you are a board game and mainly playing card game creator, correct?
That is right. So I've got, six card games and one board game, and I got another card game on the way.
Nice. So the one that we're going to be really talking about today is Don't Get Stabbed, yep. Correct?
Yeah, that's my first game. That's my baby, the one that started everything.
Do you want to talk about it a little bit?
Explain
what it is. And
so Don't Get Stabbed, it's a game where you get to kill your family and friends for pretend. The lawyer said I had to put for pretend on there
Smart decision.
To make sure I was covered. So in this, basically you have one person who's the killer. Everyone else is victims. So the killer's trying to get everyone stabbed three times so they die. And then the victims are all kind of working together to try to escape. So they can either kind of work together or occasionally screw each other over to make sure someone else dies and they get to live.
So like a real life horror movie.
Yep. I tried to take the horror movie experience and turn it into a fun game.
I feel like that's like looking at the cards. That's exactly what it is. And I like the jokes. I like the jokes on the cards that are very much horror references.
So when the first time we played it, it was really funny because the first game lasted less than 10 minutes.
Yep.
The killer didn't get a single stab in, and we won. My friend was like, wait.
That'll never happen again.
My friend was like, wait, I didn't kill anybody. I didn't do anything. Like, yeah, we already won it. So then we started playing again, and then it was like, then everyone started dying.
Yeah.
But I will say, I love the art on these cards because it really does like tie into like the humor of the card game.
Yeah, that's I did all the art for that one myself.
Did you really?
And basically I would go to the Westerville Library after work and teach myself how to do vector art. Because I wanted to do something in between South Park and Scooby-Doo, because I figured that's probably the best that I could accomplish.
Right.
So I'm happy with how it turned out, considering, you know, my lack of artistic skill. Some of the newer games, I've worked with some freelance illustrators and stuff, but for that one's 100% on me.
My favorite card here, because it's also kind of like ties into jokes that Jordan and I have made about things, is investigate a strange noise. It's probably just the wind.
Yeah, that one, I put in like little jokes for myself in there, and the killer, Stabby, he plays the saxophone because I played the saxophone.
Oh, nice.
He's also left-handed most of the time, and that's because I'm left-handed.
Do you want to explain how the game is played real quick?
Yeah.
Just kind of a summary?
So you pick one person to be the killer to begin with. Everyone knows who the killer is. It's not like a secret identity thing. And you kind of, everyone gets an action card to begin with. Can I see it real quick?
Yeah,
I can show them on camera. So everyone starts with an action card, which are these cards that have a green side and a purple side. So if you're the victim, you use the green side. If you're the killer, you use the purple side. So everyone starts with one of those. And then once everything gets shuffled up, then everyone starts drawing cards. And the victims are trying to match up what they're called combo cards. So they have all these kind of like horror tropes on them, like get lost, your cell phone dies, stuff like that. And when they get matching ones, they get to draw from the car card pile. And then if they can pull out the cards to spell out the word car, they escape. But also in the deck are stab cards. So if you get stabbed, you can try to use one of your action cards to like avoid it, or try to give it to somebody else or heal it. But if you get stabbed three times, you die. And then the killer, when they use action cards, they get to do stuff like put victims into traps, steal cards from them, do different things to make it more likely they get stabbed. And then if the killer draws a stab card, they get to put it back in the deck wherever they want. So they can target someone to make sure they get stabbed and killed off.
This sounds fun. It's a very family-friendly game.
You didn't get to play it.
I didn't.
Yeah, because we were having game night, and I pulled it out, and I was like, hey, this is a game, like, we have to play this. I was like, this looks absolutely hilarious. And my friends were like, what is this? I was like, don't worry about it. We're just going to play it. We ended up like doing multiple rounds. So everyone got to be the killer several times. When I was the killer, I think I actually lost the game.
Really?
Yeah. So everyone got to spell car. And I was like, oh, damn.
Didn't do it. we're not a good killer was what we've learned about right. Jordan is well, you're not a good killer.
I also like games like board games, specifically like old games like Sorry and stuff like that, Uno, where you're just basically screw everybody over and make sure that you always win. So that's what I liked about this game, because as you're the killer, or even as a victim, it's like Human Shield. Like that one cracks me up, where you grab somebody, you can like use like, yeah, I'll get stabbed, you get stabbed. So you can like kill off your fellow victims.
I feel like really survival. To a degree, it's just kind of embracing like the underlining core of like most old games for the most part. So there's some exceptions, but I feel like most old games, even if it's like family friendly, quote unquote, is like you're really just trying to be an asshole to everybody else in the game so you can win.
Yeah.
So really aren't just like, it's just basically taking the mask off of that and like, eh.
Yep.
I like games specifically designed where you are supposed to screw everybody over.
Yep.
Which makes it fun, I feel like.
Because there's some games you can play it ruthless or you can kind of dial it back, but I like the games that are more focused on just being as brutal as you can possibly be.
Yeah.
We have a similar game at our house that we have not tried to play yet because we are waiting to have like a game night, but because it wouldn't be fun with just two of us, but it's Jaws. And so somebody plays as Jaws as the shark, and you're basically, you just have to fucking eat everybody.
Yeah. I have that, but I haven't played it yet either. Yeah.
I'm waiting, like there's
no way I can't buy that. And have
right.
It.
That was my thought. I was like, I can't. And it was on sale. It was like $5 off at Target when I got it too. And I was like, there's no way I cannot. Like if I walk away from this and don't get it right now, I'm a fucking idiot.
So aside from kind of some obvious Scream references, what other movies like kind of inspired you when you were making this?
So I try to describe the game as if you took Scream, the Friday the 13th video game, and the card game Exploding Kittens, and Frankenstein them all together.
Yes, I can see that is kind of what I made. Kittens reference there.
Yeah, I was playing the Friday the 13th video game at the time.
Like
so
the
I got
old
a lot
NES
of,
one?
No, the new one, the newer one. So like I was playing that at the exact time that I was working on this. So like there was a lot of inspiration that came out of there. And Scream is my favorite movie. So like,
right.
Or my favorite horror movie. So like that.
That was going to be my next question. So I'm glad you said that. I was going to ask what your favorite horror movie series is. Yeah. And you just answered that for me, which I love that because that's not my favorite, but it's definitely up there for me. Scream is definitely one of my.
So why Scream?
It was actually the first horror movie that I actually remember ever watching.
Oh, okay.
I was over at a friend's house and I had heard of it and he's like, hey, do you want to watch it? Cause we were like 13 or something. You know, my family was never into horror movies or anything. So we had never seen it. So I remember watching it. I'm like, well, yeah, I really like these. So I'm going to watch all of them and started watching like Friday 13th, like all the classics and stuff after that. And I've been hooked on horror movies
Scream
ever since.
Came out in 90s. Eight, I believe, somewhere around there.
I think it's 96. Actually,
I think you're right. I think it's 96. Yeah. I just remember I snuck in to see it in theaters.
Really? Yeah, that's awesome.
My friends and I actually like snuck in to go see it in a theater.
I think for me, one of the things that makes that movie series so good is like they have consistent characters throughout the series, and not a lot of horror series do that. Like sometimes the victim chains from movie to movie, and I think that's kind of what it makes it fun, is like there are these very consistent characters that you get to know throughout the entire series.
Right. Yeah. And I'm a sucker for like murder mystery stuff, so mix that with a horror stuff, and I was just like, it was made for me.
Right. That's why I feel like the other reason it was really good for me. I would tell you my personal favorite horror series number one will always be Nightmare on Elm Street.
Really?
Yes, I'm a big Nightmare on Elm Street fan.
Yeah, I'm between like it's Scream and then it's Friday the 13th.
Mine is Halloween.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's
Halloween's
my favorite Friday the 13th.
First Halloween movie.
Is what is it? The one where Friday the 13th where he goes to like Manhattan or something somewhere.
Jason takes Manhattan.
Jason, that one's. And I say favorite, I mean it's terrible.
I love bad B movies. So like Jason Takes Manhattan is like right up there. It's
it's like those types of movies are like great just to like have on when you're doing stuff. Like a lot of people like I don't think they appreciate some of these movies of like like they were just meant to be fun.
Right.
And, and some of the like, you're taking this way too seriously.
Yes, just have some fun with it. I hate people like that. Like, just stop taking it so seriously. That's not. Can you really sit and watch this movie and think that you're supposed to take it seriously?
Yeah, like he just punched a guy's head completely off.
Right. You think that is your first problem, is that you think you're supposed to take that seriously.
Well, it's like Jason X, where they literally just like, there's a the bonus feature of the DVD is nothing but a kill reel.
Yes.
Just every death in the movie.
I also really enjoy Freddy versus Jason. And that was another one that I just really enjoyed the like complete.
I was just sad that Kane Hodder didn't get to play Jason.
Right, yeah, that so kind weird. Of made yeah. it. Yeah.
So, like that was, to me, that was like the shittiest thing about it. They wanted someone bigger to kind of go against Freddy. So they made Jason bigger than he was than Kane Hodder. But I was like, dude, this guy is Jason.
Yeah. Like you've gotten so used to his portrayal and his physique playing that it's like off putting when it. You see it's like, wait a second. Who is this guy?
Like, I did feel like that. Yeah, that was very, the exact word. It was very off-putting. Yeah. I was like, what?
I'm not even sure who they got to play him in that movie, but yeah, I was like,
Tyler something?
Yeah, he's way bigger.
Yeah.
He's like a bodybuilder or some shit. And I was like, wait, why? Like, just because
did he just start taking steroids because he knew he was going to have to fight Freddy Krueger? Like, is that what happened?
Yeah, it's like, in this movie, Jason's just massive. It's like, what the hell? Like, so you have you brought some other games with you as well, because you've also created some other games. What is Zombies Pizza?
So that is a game I made. So the first couple of games I made were is Don't Get Stabbed, Full of It, and The Unseen.
Oh, well,
and they were all kind of like,
I was gonna say the Unseen is older people. I'm looking like I'm eyeballing that one.
Yeah, so that one is about a cult taking over a town.
Yes.
And you have one person who's the cult leader. They brainwash some other people and they all kind of know who each other are, and they're going to lie and manipulate the other players so they can't find out who the cult leader is, because there's going to be an election at the end where you get an executioner and the executioner picks one person to kill that they think is the cult leader.
I love that because I love to watch documentaries about like cults.
Oh, yeah.
And things. So I'm like, this seems extremely interesting.
Oh, this is one of those games. It's like, 5 to 20 players.
Yeah. It's a big one. I don't know if you've ever heard like werewolf games.
I actually have Who is a Werewolf upstairs. It's a card game. Yeah. 7 players minimum.
Yeah.
I was like, I am never going to get 7 people. When I bought it, I was like so excited, and I opened it up and I was like, oh my God, there's no way I'm going to get 7 people in a room to play a card game. And then I realized it's Among Us.
Yeah,
it's the exact same premise as Among Us.
That game actually ranks on, if you search for Among Us board game on Amazon, that game shows up, which is so weird. But the I try to describe to people that if you know what a werewolf game is, I made it simple enough that drunk people can do it.
Yeah. So for those who may not understand what a werewolf game is, it's where group of people, one person's a werewolf, and everyone's trying to figure out who's the werewolf.
Yep. It's like a secret identity type thing and social deduction.
Yeah, and the one I have upstairs, it's like you actually turn off the lights or everyone closes their eyes, and then the werewolf attacks somebody, and then you'll have to figure out who killed that person.
So, yes, I'm following. There is, for anybody who watches Only Murders in the Building in the second season, they play a very similar game.
Yep.
It's like a serial killer thing game. That they do. That's very, and it's, I think it's like Martin Short's character like invented it, and it's very similar. It's like exactly they turn the lights off, and then somebody dies.
And you can make it more of a role playing game as well if you wanted to. So, the one I have, it even says like, oh, you should act out your roles and stuff. I was like, oh my God, this is like super like detailed.
Yeah, there's some of them that like, there's one that's called Blood in the Clock Tower or something that's supposed to be kind of like that. There's another one, it's called With Two Rooms and a Boom, where it's like two very large groups of people in different rooms and they're like negotiating back and forth. Like,
oh, weird.
These types of games have like exploded in like the past 5 years.
I think part of it is with there's been a like some of the more popular video games also has been kind of helped that. I think Among Us really becoming kind of like the, it's a little past its time now. It was like a big thing. It was
a total fad.
100% fad. Then it kind of like died down. But I think with the resurgence, like some kind of rise of that, I think with those, there was a kind of resurgence in some of these types of games.
Yep.
I think it's funny though that Among Us, it became such a thing that it was like leaking and filtering into other video games with like mods and things that people would make for the other games. So you could do like, you could sit and play that game with a mod and do like an Among Us version of that in a different game, which I think is just crazy to me. And that's not the first time I've seen that happen in a video game where it's like something filters. And I just like, it's crazy. Like if I want to play that game, I'll play that game. But apparently I can also play a different game and play that game. That was very confusing to me the first time I saw that. And I was like several people did like an Among Us in The Sims 4. It was also in Animal Crossing. Sorry, just
screwed up. Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
Animal Crossing. There was an Animal Crossing one too. And I was just like, what?
So funny.
It's like, take these pure wholesome games and make them like, which of The Sims I get, because that's kind of the point, is to just mod the shit out of that game and just make it the worst thing ever. But Animal Crossing was the one I was like, really?
Yeah. So what is Zombies Want Pizza? So this one's been like screaming because I love zombies. So I was like, So I've been like so hyper focused on this. So I was like, what is this?
So that's a game I made for my nieces and nephews because they were getting pissed. I kept making games they weren't allowed to play. So
was a lot of murder.
So I made a first game for them. And so that one, it's you are all pizza chefs. And you get the grossest ingredients possible and you pick which ones you think are the grossest to put on your pizza. And then the zombie's like a judge and they pick like the grossest one and that pizza gets eaten. And then the other people that lose, they get eaten by the zombie.
I feel like my nieces need this. So fun fact about like, I got them the Own Nuts game. Uh-huh. I feel like they also need this one. So fun fact, my brother-in-law, him and his dad, they own a carryout. And it's like really well known. They live in like Rockford, Ohio. It's like a small town, but the carryout's very well known. It's like a carryout, sit down restaurant catering thing. And they're very well known for their pizza. And they're always like, because dad makes pizza. And so it's like pizza everything with them. And then they go to work and help dad make pizza sometimes. So I feel like this is something I'm going to have to, because they'll like eat that up.
Yeah, it's like, it's gross ingredients like old lady farts and wet toilet paper. Yes. It's just like the grossest things I could think of.
Yep. Well, it's like this one I'm holding right now. Oh, nuts. Family game night has gone nuts.
Yes. This is the one I did get for my nieces. Yeah.
Battle to be the squirrel with the most nuts stashed for the winter, but don't drop your nuts. So what is this?
Don't drop your nuts.
So yeah, it is a game. So basically you are trying to stash nuts away for the winter. So you take turns drawing cards, and different cards have like different nut values on them. Mm-hmm. But there's also like negative nuts in there. And you get stuff negative into your nuts. Hands, and then you want to stash them. You get like 3 stashes per game. So at the end of the game, whoever has the most points stashed wins. But as you're pulling the cards, it's kind of a push your luck because you roll a die, and in the cards are a drop your nuts card. And if you get one of those, then you lose everything that's in your hand. So you're trying to collect as much as you want because you can only stash a couple times, but also you're risking it because the more you go, the more likely it is you're going to get one of those stop and drop your nuts cards.
I like how you go from that to don't get stashed.
Yeah. I try to make a little something for everybody.
Oh, but I like that. It's like there's family friendlies.
So what like really drove you, inspired you to like start making these
games?
Yeah,
yeah. I feel like because I was like, when I started to like look into all the different games you made, I was like, this is such a smart idea of like to being able to do something, but like also enjoy what you're doing. And I was like, how, like, it's one of those things that I see, you know, like you have those circumstances where you run into something in life and you're like, why didn't I think of that? And that was one of those moments where I was like, why didn't I think of this? This is fantastic.
Yeah. Like I had always like been creative. Mm-hmm. But like I always had some limitations of, you know, like, oh, I'd love to write a comic book, but like, oh, I'm not very good at art. Like, or I'd like to do a movie, but like
I wrote one, but and I wrote it years ago, and there's, I can't do art, so it's just sitting on my computer.
Yep. And like for years I'm like, you know, I need to kind of find something that's mine that I can do. And I was over at my cousin's and we were playing games, and my cousin just leaned over and she's like, you know, you should make one of these. And it's just like this bomb went off in my head of like,
I should.
Like I, but on the car ride home, my fiance was driving me home because I was really, really trashed after that night. And like in the car, I'm just like, I'm going to call it Don't Get Stabbed. It's going to be this. It's going to have that. And like, I know he was just kind of humoring me of like, oh, yeah, I'm sure it's going to be great. But like 2 weeks later, like I had a working prototype and we were back and at the same group. And I'm like, okay, I made a game that we're going to play.
I just want to applaud you because I love how you planned it out when you were trashed and like you like were still able to like, I remembered.
Yes, it's like a spinach for me. Right. Like Popeye gets spinach, it's me and alcohol.
I love that. That's fantastic. I love that reference.
So are you planning on making any board games or are you sticking with just card games?
As of right now, I'm just doing card games mainly just because like it's a small company. So yeah, there are a lot, you know, more cost board efficient games, to manufacture than what board games are. I've got some ideas and stuff, especially for Don't Get Stabbed. Like, there's a lot that I can do with that with a board game. It's just getting to the point where I'm okay spending that much to get it made. And maybe we'll go to Kickstarter with it. But my first kind of goal over the first couple years of the business was to build up a library of having different things that
you don't
like Don't Get Stabbed. Well, you might like this.
Then you might like this.
You don't want to pay $25 for a game. Well, I got one that's $10 that you maybe are like. So
I
try to do
that. I really love the variety, and I love the how creative they all are. They're all very individually unique in their own little aspect. And the board game thing makes sense to me. Jordan's in the process right now of like trying to make a board game for like. Like what the Spooky Door podcast board game.
Well, because I built a board game a couple years ago, and it's same kind of premise of just screwing everybody over.
Yep.
And so I'm kind of taking that game and I'm kind of revamping it, but I wanted to do something where like it's a group of teenagers going into a haunted house, and there's actually a counting clock in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get out of the game. You have to get out of the house before the clock reaches midnight and you're trapped in there forever.
Yeah, that's good tension. It's kind of good tension there.
Yeah, so it's like you can work together, you can screw everybody over, and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a slow process of building all that and writing all the rules.
Yeah.
He was showing it to me earlier and I was very like in that situation too. I was very impressed with like how he had thought of it. And I'm like, I'm a very creative person myself, but you know, there's different types of being creative. And that's not it for me. Like I probably couldn't sit down and make up a game. There's a shit ton of other stuff I can do. I'm a fantastic story writer and stuff, and I can paint, but I'm like, I can't do that. That's just not how my brain functions. So I'm very impressed to like, as well, to see like other people have different aspects of creativity and see what they can do with that. And I always think that's very like impressive to see somebody put something together, especially like so many different things.
Like, yeah, like I've tried to make most of the stuff, it's random things that pop in my head and they get put into a spreadsheet in my phone. And then eventually just, I come back later, I'm like, I've got the itch to make another game. So I start going through and like, well, if I take this idea and kind of mix them together, that kind of makes something.
Right. Yeah. All right. So we have Portal Potties, which...
Poop game.
That's hilarious. Yeah, it's a poop game. A game about wizards who teleport poop.
Which, like, not only... Okay, I just want to say, not only is it a game about poop, but there's wizards.
The last player with a portal potty not overflowing with human yogurt wins. That's so gross. All right, Jordan, take it away.
So this one I am particularly proud of because I have the maturity of a 7-year-old.
Hey, man, anytime there's like poop jokes and fart jokes, I'm totally in.
Yeah. In this game, you're all wizards that have lost your jobs. So you've all decided to get into the portal potty business. So you're using your magic to teleport poop into each other's portal potties to make them overflow and put them out of business. So you win.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So you can like have a monopoly on porta potties.
Exactly. So each player has like a board that has like 3 different colored porta potties, and there's poop tokens, and you have cards that you cast spells on, like Alakapoo, Fart Zam and stuff. And you move poop out of yours into others. And when they have 5 and then they're overflowing, and then if all 5 of yours are overflowing, then you're out of the game. And then the last person who has one that's not overflowing, they won.
Can I just ask how this came to be? Like, where did this start? Did it start? Okay, here's the real question. Did it start with poop or did it start with wizards?
It started with poop.
Okay, that would have been my guess.
Because poop was, you know, it still is, but like, you know, you get pillows that are like the poop emoji and everything. Like, all that stuff is like huge now. I'm like, I should do something poop related because 1, poop is popular. 2, I think I'd probably be good at it because I'm like, it's that immature. It's very popular. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, what could I do? And like, I you know, the name of the company is Rookie Mage Games. So like, I'm like, I can throw some wizard stuff in there, and it just kind of built from there. And the art for this, I particularly love, because like, it's the first one, this and O-Nuts, I did at the same time, where I had like a professional illustrator do stuff. So having that initial conversation with her of, I need you to make a bunch of poop that's different colors.
And wizards also.
And wizards doing it. And she understood it, the assignment right away.
She was on board. I can tell she did. I love it.
There's secret elixirs in here, which is basically laxatives. It's called the secret elixir of pooping. There's the magical wand of flushing, which is a plunger. Just crazy things that we took like bathroom and made them magical.
This is like exactly what I say when I mean I'm very impressed with things like that, because I personally never would have sat down and thought poop and wizards. But like seeing somebody else, I'm like, this is fantastic. Well, I'm glad I wouldn't have thought it, but I'm glad somebody did.
Well, we haven't even talked about the fact that the name's a pun.
Yes. I am like not capable of saying porta potty anymore. It just comes out as porta potties. So like we went to like Ren Fair and I'm like, I gotta go to the porta potty, and like everyone just kind of looks at me and I'm like, just ignore me.
I'm gonna start saying it now. I'm gonna start saying totally porta potties. Yeah, and so when people cooler. Ask me, I'm gonna tell them why. And like, cause you gotta get this game. That's why.
Cause yeah, that's where the poop goes. There's just a portal at the bottom, and
you'll never, and then you know what? You'll never look at a porta. I almost said porta potty.
Yep.
It started. It gets but stuck. You'll never look at a porta potty the same way again, and it won't be like this negative, disgusting thing. It'll be a fun.
It's magical.
It'll be a fun, magical experience now.
So, let me ask you this: from like the first thought of creation of these games to like the finished product, how long does it usually take you?
It's normally going to be at least 6 months. Mm-hmm. Like Don't Get Stabbed was about 6 months. Zombies Want Pizza was about 6 months. The longest that I've probably been on something has probably been about a year, 3 months or so. And that's when it's like I'm done with it. That's still before it's gone to be produced and actually get it in to sell.
How many times, like, how often do you play a game? Like, how often do you play it in, like, the like early stages when you're developing it, so you get the mechanics right?
So many times. Like, I probably haven't played Don't Get Stabbed in, like, 2 years because I played it so much. I was so sick of it.
Yes.
Some of the ones, like, we still do, like, The Unseen, we play that a ton. Like, we play that every Thanksgiving and Christmas and stuff. That's cool. But like so many of these games, like I played them so many times that by the time I'm selling them, I don't want to ever play them again.
And Don't Get Stabbed, did you ever come across where like it was a game breaking moment or a mechanic that didn't work? Or
I had it a couple times. The biggest thing with Don't Get Stabbed was figuring out, because it's an asymmetrical game where one person has a certain amount of powers and everyone else is different, balancing that correctly. Yeah. To where it's fair and people don't feel like, you know, sometimes people will feel like they're at a disadvantage, but they're not actually at a disadvantage. Right. But like trying to moderate that feeling at least to make it work. So that was like really the longest part with Don't Get Stabbed, because like that required a bunch of testing.
Right.
Just to like, okay, on average, is one side winning more than the other? Because if so, I need to see if something's wrong.
Right, because you
don't
want people
side.
To lose interest in the game.
Exactly. I was saying when we played it, it was pretty balanced. Because the first game, like first time we played it, I was laughing because we beat it in like 5 minutes. Uh-huh. I was like, oh my God, we spelled out car. By the way, the whole like lost keys, dead battery, like you're trying to like get enough, you're trying to spell out. To win the game, you have to spell out C-A-R, and it's like in different. It's a different deck, but if you pull out like you'll pull out a card, it's like a dead battery, or you lost your keys or something like that, so you actually don't spell it. But so the first game we played, we beat it like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and then the second one, I think the killer killed everybody, and then like the third or fourth, fifth games, then it was like more mixed. Like someone died, someone won. Like there was a couple games where the killer won.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say it's very balanced.
Yeah, I tried to make it balanced, but also make it feel like the killer was overpowered.
Right.
Just like a horror movie would be.
Right.
Because, like, I still get, you know, people that say, oh, it's not balanced. And then, you know, the killer's too powerful. And then the next week I'll get an email saying the victims are too powerful. Like, and for the asymmetrical, nothing's ever going to be perfect. So, like, I put it as close as I could and still gave a horror movie feel.
Right.
One of my favorite cards is the card where It's the one where you're drunk.
Yes.
And the picture on it is like the guy and the killer, and he's saying something like, I love you, man.
Yeah.
Like, you're leaning right on the killer, like, I love you, man. It's my favorite.
Was there a was there any particular card that you had to take out that you didn't want to take out or anything because it didn't work? Or
not for that one. That one, like some of the stuff got renamed. There was a Get Lost, and then there was another one. I can't remember the name now, but like the premise of what the art was going to be was too close. That was like, it wasn't enough variety. And so that one got switched to the cell phone dies.
Okay, gotcha.
That was the last one I did of like, it's too close. I need to switch it out with something that just feels like I'm repeating. So I came up with the cell phone dies and switched that out.
It is very similar to Exploding Kittens in a way. You can definitely tell.
Which definitely is great.
Yeah. It definitely has that kind of vibe. However, I actually had more fun playing this game than I did having Exploding Kittens. Because Exploding Kittens is just kind of like, you know, like, just, you're fucked. You know, it doesn't matter. It's like, you just got delayed. It's between you and one person. There's four cards left. You both have, you know, it's like, okay, you know, one of you is going to win.
Yeah.
This game feels a little more, because it's a card game, so it's always randomized. Mm-hmm. So this one feels a little more like you're trying to, like, if you're like, okay, like two stat points, and it's down to me and the killer. I have CA, I need an R, and you're scrambling.
Yeah, like you've got a chance.
Like there's still a chance, but like with don't like Exploding Kittens, if it's like two players and there's like four cards left, you're like, oh, well, shit.
Like, yeah, like I really liked like the drawing of the cards of like, are you going to get Exploding Kitten? That tension.
Yes.
Is like, of like, that kind of works for like horror movie stuff. Like I can use part of that mechanic in there.
But having someone being like the villain in the game, that's a whole fun dynamic to it as well.
And it's amazing how like the nicest people will become these vicious players when you put them in those positions.
Again, that's like, I love like playing games like that because it's like, yeah, everyone's like super nice. It's like everyone starts getting drunk and everyone's just like, oh, fuck you. Like swearing at each other. And like, the last time I ever played Monopoly, the game ended up on the board on the ground.
Yep.
Like, everyone just grabbed it.
Oh, yeah. That's a very competitive game in my household. Yes.
All right. So we have Full of It. We have not talked about this one. Conversation starters for horrible people and dirty liars.
Well, that's right there for me. Mine's the dirty liars, but I don't feel like I'm a...
Before you even get a chance to explain it. Normal icebreakers are boring. Skip the BS and get right to the juicy stuff. Designed for adults, these cards start conversations on topics you might regret. So, can you explain this a little bit?
Yeah. Like, so, this was actually...
That's all right.
So, Full of It is actually a game that initially did not work and got scrapped and returned into this. It was originally a game called One Upper, where it was supposed to be like you have that one friend, whenever you tell a story, they have to one up you one how. And so we had that, and like every friend group, I think, has one of those.
We had one, we called it My Uncle Much Better.
Oh, yeah.
Because every story of, my uncle did this one.
Right? I know somebody like that. I'm not going to name who it is, but I know. So
exactly
like
what
that.
You mean.
Yeah. So the idea was like you had these prompts, and then everyone had to try to one up it, and whoever one upped it the best won. But it seemed like it was putting too much pressure on people to really be super creative and elaborate in a certain amount of time. But I still like, these are funny. I can do something with this. So I'm like, well, maybe I'll just turn them into like conversation starters and then let people lie if they want to lie, or they can tell the truth. Like, I don't care, as long as people are laughing and having fun. So I just switched it over into the like questions that you could ask. So it's like questions like, have you ever walked in on your parents having sex? If so, you have to describe in excruciating detail.
Oh, Jesus.
My favorite one that you get like this look of panic in people's eyes is, how have you failed to live up to your parents' expectations? And like, you see like the soul drain out of some people.
God, sounds brutal. Is this like a win-loss game, or is this just a conversational?
You can do it where like, if you can guess that someone's lying, you get points and stuff. Very cool. But I've tried to make it like as non-rule binding as possible.
Say it has the shortest instructions I've ever seen.
Yes,
for a game. That's fantastic.
Shuffle the cards and place the deck face down. Each player takes turns drawing a card and reading it out loud. Every player then takes turns responding to the card. That's all the instructions.
Yes.
So I was going through these. Usually, some of these are brutal.
Oh yeah.
What is the strangest thing that has ever sexually aroused you?
Wow. This is...
Yeah. What is the worst prank you've ever committed in high school?
Ooh.
Has ever anyone ever...
I made a girl, like, cry. She didn't talk to me for, like, weeks.
Has anyone ever walked in on you masturbating? What is the stupidest way you've ever lost a lot of money? What is the secret you've hidden from your parents the longest? What is the worst way you've ever tried to spice up your sex life? Like, these are amazing. They're so brutal. What is the grossest thing you remember doing as a kid?
And a lot of these, like, some of them are, like, from personal experiences, but, like, a lot of them are just stories that I've heard from, like, friends, and that, like, one of them is, like, where's the weirdest place you've ever pooped? And, oh,
and I have no shame in, like, where I poop, so that would be good.
But like that one came from a story that a friend told me about, like her dad or uncle, I forget, but he had like sudden diarrhea and was driving to a meeting, and the closest place that he could go was his sister's house, but she wasn't home, but he could get into the garage. So we found like a plastic container in the garage and went in there.
Man. Oh, no.
And like that story is just always around me of like, oh, that poor guy. Yeah, taking his shit in a garage.
I don't think I can probably say I've never not pooped in the toilet. I mean, the only time I haven't pooped in the toilet was probably when I was a baby and I was pooping in my diaper, but...
I think this is the most...
At least say that. I've always...
You got some.
I've always got to go in the toilet.
This is definitely
the
most poop-filled episode we've ever had.
I love that, though. But, you know, I think that's what's fun about this is it's a lot of, like... It's a weird bonding mechanism.
Yes. Who's the worst kisser you've ever kissed? What is something you should be ashamed of but are secretly proud of? What is the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you in front of your crush?
I remember like
this is amazing.
The kiss one. I remember like being younger and like dating, and I remember, and I don't know if this has ever happened to either of you, like I kissed a guy once and like my immediate reaction, like, and I didn't verbally say it, and maybe I should have after it happened, was, who taught you that? And how have you gotten into this far into your adult life and nobody told you that that was not attractive?
Yeah.
So I do have to ask, why is it 17 and up? Like, what's the cutoff limit for that?
So,
why 17? Like, why not 18?
Like, I just want to know, like, what is the difference here? Like,
it's mainly for when I sell them online that parents don't buy them for kids that are too young.
How do you decide that? How do you decide what the age cutoff is?
There's no like real rules for this stuff. So I try to stay close to how like movies are rated.
That's smart.
So with that one, like with it having alcohol and like stuff like that and sex stuff, it's just like, it's probably going to lean what a rated R movie would be.
Right.
So I kind of put it there where like a game like The Unseen. It's got an execution in it, and because of cult content is, so it'd probably be like PG-13, so it's 13 up.
Well, and probably that's not gonna scream to like kids either.
No.
Like that's not a, like, it's definitely, you look at the game, you can tell it's not aimed for like kids and stuff.
And well, the Don't Get Stabbed was one I was worried the most about because it's so cartoony looking.
Right.
And I go to conventions and stuff, and like parents will come up and they're like, oh, I should buy this for my kid. And I always have the get drunk and have sex cards off to the side, and I hand them to them, and I'm like, this is the reason why it says 18 plus.
I so love that. Decide I right love now that if you're okay with this. You're prepared and you can give them an example of like this is why this is here. You as a parent personally decide what like how you feel about this, but here it is.
Yeah, because like I've had it where people were like, I bought this for my 8-year-old and it's got this stuff, and I'm like, it says 18 plus on the box. Like, I don't know what else you want me to do.
I did my part. Yeah. I think it's, speaking of conventions, I think it's fun. So we had, I don't know how you found out about our podcast. Yeah. I don't know, but he had reached out to us to be on the podcast. And then later we were at a convention and you were there and you saw us before we saw you.
Yeah,
you had a sweatshirt.
We just happened.
I just happened wearing my hoodie with the Spooky Door logo.
Yeah,
and but it's funny because you had told us you couldn't do that weekend because you're gonna be at a convention, and I knew about the convention in the back of my head, and I was like, we're going, and I almost asked you if it was the same convention, and I totally forgot to ask you,
which worked out because that's how I got a hold of Don't Get Stabbed, so I was able to like have a good like time to play it.
Yeah.
And get used to it. Yeah. It's one of those games like now when we, because every Thursday night we always do board game nights with my friends and don't get stabbed since it's such a short game. You know, usually, what, 10 minutes, 15
yeah,
minutes?
Yeah, 10, 15 minutes-ish.
Yeah. So it's like just like Exploding Kittens, which yeah. is a quick game. Yeah, it's usually our kind of our icebreaker. We'll pull that out.
Like, right,
what's good?
Yeah.
We'll do this one, and then we'll kind of get in the mood.
That's a good way to like start a game night is like do the small fun stuff first, and then do something big.
Well, because like, we've been playing like all.
Or maybe just a bunch of small stuff nonstop is also because I've done that too, and that's been very fun because it keeps like. It keeps the paces constantly changing, and especially if you're drinking, because the
you gotta
stay like.
But if you're playing
amused,
like,
too,
because sometimes you get scared when we play like these like long, serious games. So like something starting off with like "Don't Get Stabbed" where everything's hilarious is a good way to start the night off.
Yes,
or we do the opposite where we finish the night with like "Don't Get Stabbed."
Right.
Yeah, and the gaming community, like, they've started to call them in between games. Of like you're setting up one big game and it takes like, you know, 20 minutes to set up. So this is a game that people play in between. Why someone else is setting up that game.
Have you always been into like card games and board games?
Kind of always since like college. When I was in college is when Cards Against Humanity kind of took over.
Would you play
and revitalized that whole idea?
I am a master at Cards Against Humanity. Fun fact about me. I am a master. If I play it with groups of people and we play multiple rounds, I'm frequently the person people start getting mad at because I win too much.
Did you ever play Things?
No.
Okay, so Things is kind of like Cards Against Humanity, but everyone writes down their answers.
Okay.
You're given a prompt and everyone writes down, and then you have to guess who wrote what.
Okay.
And it's cool, but it takes forever
each
round because everyone's writing it down, mm-hmm. and then you have to read. Like handwritings, and then normally you have to have someone else who's reading it that's not part of it because that way you can't tell who
that
was.
Yeah, I have. I would say that would be so hard for me because I have a very distinct handwriting.
So
it's not needed. Like, you know, most girls have very like girly handwriting. Yeah. I do not, and so, it's very distinct, and people would know like, oh, that's Ashley's sloppy ass handwriting.
So like when Cards Against Humanity came out, I was like, oh my god, this is just like Things, but this is. So much easier.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's like answers are just as fucked up.
And
so
fun
like,
fact, they recently made a kid version of that.
Yeah,
which
they did. It's not just apples to apples?
Basically, yes. That's the first thing I thought when I looked at it. I'm like, oh, so they made apples and apples again.
My sister actually got it to play with the nieces, and she did not. She thought maybe... But she said it's a little bit more entertaining than apples to apples. And she got it because they are really into, like, games. They have game nights, which is why, like, I got the O-Nuts for Christmas. Because I was like, they love, like, they've never played Exploding Kittens itself. But they have, like, a lot of the other ones of it. Because, like, you know,
they have new games every 6 months now. Yeah.
So they have a lot of those. And I was like, well, this is really similar to a lot of the stuff that they do. So I got that. And then my sister got Cards Against Humanity for Kids. And it's like...
It seems like it would be just apples to apples. But probably it's a little more...
It's
gross.
a little weirder, I think. Yeah. And I think that's why my nieces like it, because they're weirdos. Yeah. They're flipping weirdos.
Yeah, like, it's good that I have, like, nieces and nephews that are, like, my little
audience.
Yeah. I'm like, do this for a while. I'm just going to sit here and watch you. And, like, if they're laughing the whole time, it's like, okay, I think this works.
I'm over here making a podcast and, like, telling my sister, like, you can't let them listen to this podcast.
What is some of your personal like favorite board games?
So
we talked about some card games, but like, what board games do you enjoy playing?
Like, my probably favorite board game of all time is going to be Risk.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Like, and I like it, for one, like, you know, like the taking over the world type, you know, vibe of it. But like, I've got a ton of nostalgia for that of like me and my friends, you know, stealing beers from his dad's beer fridge in the garage and hanging out in his basement and just playing that till 5 o'clock in the morning. So it's probably going to be Risk. And trying to think what other ones. Betrayal, House on the Hill is very good.
I have that one. That's awesome. You played, what's the other one? It's a, oh, Mansions of Madness.
I have not played that yet. Oh my God. No.
That's not a screw your neighbor type of game, but mm-hmm. oh my God, it is great for horror because it's all H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah.
The computer is your DM, so everything is being taken care of on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you're trying to solve mysteries while like tentacle monsters and people from like other ultimate dimensions are coming in to kill you.
Nice.
Yes, which is basically like anybody who's into like horror, I feel like, is like a just... very, that's like a dream game. Like,
yeah.
H.P. Lovecraft tentacles, this is great.
Yep.
My question, did you ever get into stuff like D&D ever? Because I know that's specific to people.
No, it's one of those things, like, I have a like brother-in-law that plays it, and I'm like, I'm gonna have to like do this. Like I feel like
you're gonna have to at some point, like
a fraud in the industry of the fact that I've never played D&D. That was never in my friend group. And like my Same friend here. Groups are like a bunch of nerds. And like it seems like we should have totally have done this by some point. But like we're about to be in our 40s and still we haven't done it.
And now it's like getting together and trying to like host a night of like doing it. Like I recently just played the Skyrim board game and that took 3 days.
Really?
Yeah, it took 3 days to beat it. It was like a 20-hour game. Yeah. It was just like, and we just did one campaign. I was like, this is insane.
That's the thing with too, like D&D is like, it's a whole thing. Like it's, you have to be, and I feel like that's why it's very distinct to specific people. Like there's, it's a very target audience because it's, you have to be very dedicated mm-hmm. to it. Like it can't be like, oh sure, I'll play this thing and then maybe you'll show up. You're like, no, you have to be very dedicated to it. I've done a few campaigns in my life and I think that's the, like, I want to do another one. I think just like that's the biggest obstacle to get over in like your later adult life is like, how do I have even time to dedicate to like this?
Like I try to get for new games that I have, like I try to get like a group together to play test it and like, you know, get initial thoughts. And it just gets harder and harder as the older I get. Cause like, you know, all my friends are out reproducing. So they have all these little humans they got to take care of and stuff. So it's just like, as time goes on, it just gets harder and harder to get people together.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Like, for our game nights that we somehow we've managed to set it up like every week, which has been pretty cool. But I have some friends over and they've never played Clue.
Really?
And that's like my favorite. That's like my favorite board game.
So question, did you ever have, because I like Clue, but this was one of my favorite games growing up because there was a version of Clue. And I don't remember exactly specifically what it was called, but it was like a museum version. And it was like kind of like 3D.
13 Dead End Drive. I have it upstairs.
Love that game.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And you had to actually, like, there were little art pieces in it, and you had to physically.
So it's like, it's not a museum, it's a mansion. And it has, like, different things where you have to set up traps. And if a certain person, you have to move their piece to that trap, and like they're like a chandelier will fall and stuff like that. And it's literally a part of it.
It's like Mousetrap.
I don't think that's the same
one. Well, this one, it's like, there's like, it is a 3D game.
Okay, the one is 3D.
It has the centerpiece is a painting, and you can have that fall and hit land on someone's character.
No, this is not the same
thing. Okay, well,
the one that we had, it was pretty sure it was a museum. And if I remember correctly, there were little, like, it was kind of 3D. So there was like a flat board level, and then there were also sections that, like, I guess they were supposed to be like the upstairs of the museum.
Mm-hmm.
So like various little platforms all over the board. If I remember correctly, there were little pieces of artwork too that would be like, they looked very similar to like the game board pieces that you would move around, but they were like in specific rooms and you had to like try and steal the art.
Okay.
I don't remember what it was called. I don't remember like detailed what it was, how it worked, but I just remember it was fucking fun, and it was like one of probably the best games me and my sister played when we were little.
Well, if you're listening, we had a lot of board watching, games, and if you know what this
game
is,
and you remember what it's called, I can probably Google it and find out easily. But I would love to be able to find the game. I've not seen it anywhere, and like I've looked in like places where you can buy like used games and stuff. And I've not seen it anywhere, but it's a fun game.
So you have a game that's is this for a Kickstarter, right?
Yep, that's and coming to Kickstarter on March 28th.
And this is Nuns with Nunchucks.
Yes.
And other controversial combatants.
Yep.
Well.
And so this is, so is this like, did you do like a limited run on these or something like that?
Those are just like, I did some prototypes. Gotcha. So I can like kind of show to people, send out to reviews and stuff. I just got those in like this week.
Cool. When does the Kickstarter start?
So it'll start on March 28th.
Okay.
If you go to like nunswithnunchucks.com, takes you to the pre-launch page. You can hit like the button so you get notified when it launches.
Cool. Do you want to tell us about this, your yep. new game that you're coming out with?
So for Nuns with Nunchucks, it is a battle card game where you're trying to take over the world with like the worst group of misfits for your army whatsoever that you could ever get. So
kind of going back to your Risk.
Yep, exactly. So like you've got Nuns with Nunchucks, you have Abraham Lincoln's evil twin brother, Tony.
I like that.
Communist babies, Amish people from the future.
Oh my God.
And it like,
interesting.
It's like, it's one of those stupid things. Like I think it's hilarious and everyone kind of stops for a second and they're like, wait, wouldn't they just be the same? I'm like, exactly.
That's why joke. I kind of stopped it. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. I've got, Jeff Bezos cryogenically frozen head. just the craziest things I could think of.
I like
put
Abraham
into characters.
Lincoln's brother, Tony. Yeah. I feel like that's very like,
yeah, it's one of my favorite ones.
Yes.
So like in the guy that did the art for it, he's local. He's if you've ever heard of the Dankhouse Brewery in Newark, he does all their artwork and stuff. And that's how I found him. I was there and I'm like looking at the art and I was like, that's exactly the type of what I want. So I like annoyed the bartender till they gave me his email address.
Is it easy for you to find artists, or do you like kind of have to search, or just kind of just
it's not difficult to find artists. It's difficult to find someone that each different artists have like a different style,
right?
And trying to find someone that's like, this is the style that I think matches, and right. like, and it's one of those things that's so hard to put into words to try to explain to someone to what you're looking for. That's the hardest part of deal with it. It's just, okay, I can find hundreds,
right, but it can't just be anybody,
but I've got to go through here and find someone whose style I think matches.
And I feel like the other thing you probably would have to like, it can't just be anybody. It has to be a style that matches, and you have to know that they will be committed and they're not going to like flop on you and be like, oh, I'll do it. Just kidding. I'm not going to do it.
Exactly.
A beauty pageant contestant who's also a gopher. Rudy Giuliani trying to steal fruit the ring from Frodo. It's the most disturbing illustration.
That's fantastic.
It is
okay.
So disturbing.
This I love. I love this. I love that he's got the outfit on.
Golem.
This is like the most disturbing.
That image. Always, I will tell you, being a Lord of Rings fan, of like every time I watch the Lord of the Rings series, and like there's a scene, and like I just have a problem with that little cloth, because I'm like, it's very like, how did his balls just not like pop out?
It's movie magic,
right? I'm just like, I get it, CGI, but realistically those balls would be all over the place, and I'm glad they're not, don't get me wrong, because I don't want to see his balls. No.
So one of these cards, it's a hamster with a degree in classical theater. And
legit.
At
Good
the
for him.
Bottom here,
Good for that hamster.
At the bottom, each card has like a little joke at the bottom. And this one I'm particularly proud of, and it's going to be in the instructions because I know I'm going to get so many questions about it. But this is considered the first your mom joke in history. And it's from Shakespeare. I forget which play. I got to look it up. But it's, thou hast undone thy mother. And then someone says, Vlin, I have done thy mother. So the world's first Your mom joke right there.
Was in Shakespeare.
Yep.
And he didn't even know. Yeah. He didn't know what he started at all.
So yeah, I've been working on this one for... This one's probably been the longest I've been working on for 2 years. Because this one not only took you the game, but this one has the most art intensive. So like we went back and forth, and like some characters, it's just... They're funny on paper, but when you draw them, it's just... It doesn't really match the way you thought it would be for whatever reason. So it's like, all right, we got to replace this character and come up with something else.
What do you think is like more challenging? Like the actual, like coming up the mechanics, or like coming up like the humor on the cards?
For me, it's probably the mechanics. The hardest part is explaining the mechanics into instructions that people will understand.
Right.
Because you've, it's easy when you're with someone to teach them how to play it, because if they have questions, you can easily answer them and stuff. Right. Yeah. When you're just writing out instructions and everyone who speaks the English language in, you know, so many countries has to be able to interpret this the same way, that gets much more difficult.
I feel like that would be hard.
Yeah, it's proven to be like the part you never really think about when you get started. Like the first time I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just write the instructions. The end.
It's like one of the things like I realized when I was like, when I've made the first game I worked on was like, you have to like think of troubleshooting parts and like, okay, if this happens, this is what you need to do. And then I think this is why so many games have house rules.
Yes.
I think there's so many house rules in games too, because people are like, well, this is the way I've always just played it. So. Yeah.
And like, there's some game designers and gamers that like hate house rules. Yeah. And I'm just like, cool. Like,
yeah, just modify it.
If you have more fun playing it this way, go right ahead.
Well, like, when I say I was like playing Clue and I was playing with friends who've never played before, and I was reading the instructions and I was like, what the hell? I didn't even know. Like, you're supposed to go around the circle and everybody has to like ask. And I always just played where you can only ask one person per turn.
Uh-huh.
And I know you're supposed to be able to like everybody on all turns.
That would take like way longer.
Well, it wouldn't just take way longer, but it also feels like it kind of like cheats the game a little bit. So I was like, no, we're just going to ask one person. And I didn't realize that was a house rule. I always thought that was the rule. This is why there's so many disagreements on Monopoly.
Just. Monopoly. Oh, yeah. Monopoly. I was going to say that's one I was going to mention is the, you know, you every time you pass go, you get $200. There's the question of, and I don't know if you guys have heard this one, if you land on it, you get 400. This was like a big thing in my family. We would play Monopoly sometimes, and like, growing up, I had my aunt and my uncle, and then they got divorced, and she eventually got remarried, and my stump uncle, when he was brought into the family, he's like, yeah, when you land on go, you get $400 instead.
I've never heard
and
that.
We
never
thought, heard that either. Like, me and my sister always thought that, like, this is some rule that Uncle Pat has made up. Like, this is just, like, his little thing. But, like, in adulthood, like, we've met, not frequently, but we have met other people that, like, know that rule. And I'm like, okay, so clearly it came from somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's some, like, it's rooted somewhere that, like, you get. So you get $400. Well, if you ever want to make Monopoly more fun, you can get $400 if you land on go.
There's videos on YouTube literally says like they're debating on what happens when you land on Park Space.
Yeah, that's the biggest one is whether you're supposed to get money at like community pot or something. And we had always played that way.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I totally agree. Because I'm like, to me, I think games generally need to be sometimes modified, especially if you're playing especially if you play a game as a kid and you might not realize there's an entire mechanic you don't understand. So you just play the same way as it's a kid and you take it into your adulthood, and people are like, wait, what are you doing? Like,
I know people that they bought Don't Get Stabbed and they want to play it with their kids, so they just take those two cards out and play it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I have no clue if it technically works correctly because you're changing up like the proportions and like the you know, chances of you getting certain cards are different. Like, but as long as you're enjoying it,
right?
Great,
you know, you're enjoying it, you're having quality time with your kids. Yeah, can't really. I remember those two, it's talking about like games played when we were kids. Like, always remember too, like the games that like they don't make anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of them specific that was my favorite, and I don't know if you guys ever played this. It was called Shark Attack, and it was like a circle, and there was like a lane, kind of almost like a racetrack, uh-huh. And there were different colored fish, and there was like a battery operated shark that attached to the middle of the board, and I don't even remember the exact rules to it. But at some point in time, I don't know if it was like cards or like you had one of those twirly guys, the shark would come on and you just had to hope that shark wasn't going to eat your fish. And I remember my parents telling stories. I loved this game so much when I was little, but I remember my parents telling stories to me about it still. And I vaguely remember me like when the shark started, I was like, as a little kid, like bouncing up and down because I did not want the shark to get my fish. But like, I loved it. Game, like I wish I could find it, but they don't make it anymore.
And you can check on eBay.
Yeah,
like there's a lot of people selling games now.
And you can get it now. But and then my wonder is like, I wouldn't pay for it because who knows what the condition the piece is in, and you get it, and you know they say one thing on eBay, and then you don't get what you paid for. I don't want to get anything where the acid's like leaked inside of it, and I can't even use it.
So beyond, so right now you're doing the Nuns and Nunchucks, and that's about to do the Kickstarter. Do you have other games like coming up that you're thinking
of? Is there all kinds of just stuff?
Oh yeah, there's like three or four prototypes of different games at my office that are just sitting in a file cabinet waiting for me to get back to them. Because like when occasionally like I get like an idea of like, oh, this would really work as a game. If I don't start making it, I will tend to lose it.
Yeah.
So I'll start making something that's at least representative of like the idea that I have and then put it away of like, okay, someday when I need to, you know, get to another game in the process, I'll come back to this and see if it works. But this way there's like a physical thing that I can go back to and remember what it is.
Do you ever have moments where you just like kind of sit back and you're just like, I'm really glad like I went forward with this and it didn't just become a thought?
Oh yeah, like it's I do this full time now.
Right, so like that was kind of like
I got my own little office in Pickerington.
Yeah, and I could be somewhere else.
Like every morning, I like when I wake up at 9 a.m. instead of having to be work at 9 a.m. I'm very thankful.
That's what I hope for someday.
Like I can make my own hours. So like I go in later, I stay later. But like that's just when I'm most productive.
Right.
If you make me show up at an office at 8 o'clock, I'm not going to start working until 10 anyways, because I'm just going to sit there and be grouchy for 2 hours. So if you want to pay me to be grouchy for 2 hours, it's fine.
That's usually how I felt when I worked in an office. It was like I was grouchy for the first couple hours I was there. Not to mention I was already doing a job that just initially made me grouchy because of the people I had to deal with. But on top of that, I am already grouchy.
So I have one last question for you. Of all the games you made, what do you think is the most complicated one or the one that was the most difficult for you to make?
The most difficult is probably Nuns with Nunchucks.
Your newest one.
Because that one, it does have more strategy to it than the other ones.
Don't Get Stabbed is a little more based on just luck of the draw.
Yeah.
Like it's totally luck of the draw.
Yeah, like, most of my stuff is pretty casual, so like there's a lot of like luck, especially in like Oh Nuts and Portal Potties. Right. Those are kids' family games. You have to put more luck into that so it's like even. So like the kids have a chance of winning against the parents that know what they're doing. Where Nuns with Nunchucks, like it's got a lot more strategy to it. It's got like combos. Okay. So like trying to figure out like, okay, I want people to be able to chain combos, but I can't let them go too far because then they're just kill someone off in the first round. And that's a bad experience for that person.
And then they don't ever want
to
play the game.
I never even got a chance to play. I don't want to play the stupid game.
And then they're bad mouth. Like, they bad mouth and they tell somebody else that, don't play that game. That was stupid. That
exactly.
Happened to me.
And like, that's my responsibility of it to make sure everyone has a good
time. And definitely I feel like word of mouth is a very important thing for you with what you do. I like the little murder guy though. He's cute, but he's also murderous.
Yeah, he's stabby.
Stabby.
I've got an animatronic one that I take to conventions where I took like a Halloween one and put a robe and made a mask and stuff. So he stands by me, but I also got like a plush one made.
It's
on my shelf. Yeah. Like I might eventually make a Sunday because other people have asked for plushes of him.
I know she would buy one.
Yeah. I was just going to say that I have a vast collection of plushies at my house. And every time I get one and I tell myself I'm going to stop, I can't stop.
You can't.
So where can you order all this?
So all my stuff is available. It's rookiemage.com or everything's also on Amazon. If you go to amazon.com/rookiemagegames, everything's there. And then Nuns with Nunchucks, it's nunswithnunchucks.com. It takes you to the Kickstarter page that'll launch on March 28th.
Cool. And you can find us online at thespeakydoor.com. You can email us at info@thespeakydoor. We want to thank Jordan so much for being on the show with us.
Thanks
for
having me.
This was a very fun episode.
Yeah, this is great.
Thanks for coming to our murder basement.
I very much enjoyed your murder basement.
And journey with us next time through The Spooky Door.